This is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara, streaming at kcbx.org. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Super Tuesday today, actually.
Happy Super Tuesday. What's on your mind today?
Well, I love when a lot of things kind of come together and create a cohesive show idea. And a lot of things have come together really perfectly for today. And it kind of starts with today falling on Super Tuesday, 2020. 2020 is the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, which granted women the right to vote. So this is a historical year for women's issues and the women's movement. The actual date of the 19th Amendment being passed was August 18th, 1920. And just as a side note, if you're interested in celebrating the anniversary of the 19th Amendment, I encourage you to go up to upstate New York, to Seneca Falls, New York, which was where the initial Women's Rights Convention happened in 1848, which kicked off the suffragist movement. And that is the home of the Women's Rights Museum. And they will be doing activities all the month of August around the women's suffragist movement and the 100th anniversary. And there's a little town of Lilydale, New York, nearby, and they also are doing big events to celebrate. So this is a Super Tuesday in a Super Tuesday year when it comes to voting and voting rights. March also is Women's History Month. And March 8th is International Women's Day, which celebrates the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women around the world. And this year's theme of International Women's Day is I Am Generation Equality. So I was thinking about where we are in our quest for equality. How far have we come since 1920 to 2020? And as it just so happens, on Saturday, I was able to hear Angela Davis speak at Cal Poly. She was there as a guest for their Change the Status Quo conference, which was wonderful. And I was so happy to see this sold-out event. So many students woke up early to come in and see Angela Davis, because the Saturday morning for college students, 8:30 is really early. But it was a wonderful experience, one, to see the students there hearing this icon of the civil rights movement speaking, but also I was able to see Angela Davis speak 40 years ago when I was a student at UCSB, and hearing her talk was quite an education for me at that time in my life. She talked about things that I had never considered, and one of the themes that came up during her talk was this kind of question of how far have we come when it comes to equality or dealing with racism or any issues of gender and sexual orientation. And what stood out for me in the talk was this idea that we can provide all the education we want as far as, you know, how to treat each other, how to reduce or, you know, eradicate racism, how to bring more gender equality, how to advocate for rights of all people. But unless we address the institutions that support the behaviors like racism and inequalities, if we don't address those institutions that hold these this inequality in place, we can never really make change or progress forward. And I thought that was interesting when it came to the status and quality of women's lives, because when we look at the progress forward for women, you know, starting in 1848 and then 1920 with the passage of the 19th Amendment to where we are today, there had been great strides for women, but really nowhere near what we would expect given the magnitude of the passage of the 19th Amendment. One of the things that is a great example of how kind of stalled out the whole progress of women is the inability to get the ERA ratified, the Equal Rights Amendment, and how it got two states away from being ratified and really making a change to the Constitution, which guarantees and protects women's rights under the Constitution. And a lot of people don't realize that the ERA, without it in place, without that protection in the Constitution, we can, again, pass all the laws that we want and make all the legislation that we want, have laws that protect women in the workplace. But unless that change is made to the Constitution, it can't be upheld. These rights or these laws really can't be enforced, because if these cases get pushed up to the Supreme Court, they're not going to win, because technically under the law in the Constitution, women do not have equal status under the law as men. So for all the forward motion, there really has been a stall out around the 1980s. And we see it not just in the United States, but also globally, that for all of our steps forward, there's still some fundamental issues that prevent women from really stepping forward in any way that fully gives and grants women equal status. And we're going to talk about that today in a global and a local level, because I think it's important to recognize how similar the issues and experiences women have, no matter if they're in San Luis Obispo County or Monterey County or Santa Barbara County or in Eastern Europe or in Africa or Asia, that the struggle for women, a lot of it begins and ends at home. That the role of women in caring for families, caring for children, tending to the housework, tending to food production, hasn't really changed at all. And with lack of childcare and lack of easy access to water and lack of access to food and lack of support in policies, providing childcare or access to childcare, these issues are kind of experienced all around the world. And when women don't have equal access to those support systems or help in raising families or tending to the home or caring for the elderly, if those supports aren't there, then women are always stalled out as far as being able to progress economically and culturally and politically. So for today, I thought we'd bring our conversation a little closer to home and talk about the status of women on the Central Coast with a woman who has contributed to our social, cultural, and economic well-being of our community through her political service, her active volunteering, her support for numerous organizations, one of which being the Women's Legacy Fund, which recently released their findings, a report that they funded on the issues impacting women and girls in San Luis Obispo County in their What Do Women Need report. So I've invited my friend and my guest, a former Pismo Beach mayor and wife and mom of three, Shelley Higginbotham, to come in today so we can talk about the issues facing women locally and how these issues that we face locally compare to what women experience around the country and around the world. So that's our goal today, and we will be opening up the phone to your comments and questions. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. My girls are really good at keeping that page flowing, so you can get updates about the show there. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. All of our shows from the last 10 years are there. And please, if you are able, podcast the show, and you can listen at your convenience just by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR Podcasts, search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and all of the shows will be uploaded for you to listen to at your convenience. So I'm looking forward to my conversation with Shelley Higginbotham today. We'll be back in a moment to start our conversation. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
When women wake, mountains move. When women rise, the world rises with us. So women wake, women wake, women rise, women rise, women rise. Small gestures, we weave it all together. Much of what we do goes unseen and unsung. But from our daily labors, our downright stubborn loving, a new world is begun.
When women wake, mountains move. When women wake, mountains move. When women rise, the world rises with us. So women wake, women wake.
Likely won't ask for permission to change things. We may not even be nice.
When women wake, mountains move.
When women wake, mountains move.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Welcome, Shelley Higginbotham, to the show.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It is always a pleasure and a privilege to be on your show.
Oh, you're so nice. And I am so glad that we actually bumped into each other in the produce section at
the
grocery store.
Watch out, at the grocery store, you might end up on the radio.
Exactly. Because just in our five-minute conversation, all of this kind of came together. You said, hey, did you see this new report that came out from the Women's Legacy Fund, of which you are a part of the organization? I said, send it to me. And it was fascinating to read what had come up and to see how similar the issues that women experience here on the Central Coast are seen throughout the world. Because we assume that the Central Coast is this privileged place and it's just so beautiful and everyone is thriving. But according to the report, there's a lot of struggles.
There are a lot of struggles. And I have to do a shout out to the Woman's Legacy, which is an interest fund of the Community Foundation. And they put on a major fundraiser every year, a luncheon. And the proceeds, a lot of the proceeds, can go towards funding things like this particular study, which I think is so interesting and so needed for the very reasons that you said. We live in a bubble, some of us, and don't realize really the extent of the struggles that women and children are facing here on the Central Coast.
So I'm going to pull up a couple of the stats, and let's talk a little bit about the findings.
Okay.
There are 138,000 women and girls that are impacted on the Central Coast to these issues. And the biggest concerns that were expressed by women that were asked or polled was the availability of water. And I thought that was fascinating.
I did
the
too.
Number one concern, 64% of the women said the availability of water, and then a little farther down was the quality of the water that was available. That's a big concern going forward, is will we run out?
Sure. And that could have been reflected of this. A lot of the data that was compiled came during the drought years, and that was really a huge focus. Now, of course, it's coronavirus, but
And another drought.
Exactly. So I think that people were really worried about it. And especially when you look at our county, we had water basin issues, the county, and people having to ration water and stop watering your lawns and doing xeriscapes for landscaping.
Well, so, there for some people, too, they're having to actually purchase water, right?
Yes.
And bring it in.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a serious piece. And connecting that globally, you know, around the world, I was trying to find what the access was. There's less access to clean or improved water sources in most rural areas around the world. 743 million people in rural areas depend on unimproved water sources that continuously are fouled or run dry. So again, we think we're so far away from what's happening in Asia or Africa, but we have our own potential here. And
absolutely,
clearly that's 64%, that's a lot.
Just on a side, I'm really happy to see municipalities start to look for alternatives and use the purple pipes and recycled water. It's going to be very important to sustain this county going way into the future for our children and grandchildren.
Which is why I love having you as my guest, because with your years of service as a mayor, you still have that connection to a lot of what's going on politically in the area.
I'm lucky that way. Homelessness.
Yeah, that was number two.
That was number two. And we could look at that in two ways. Are people afraid of becoming homeless, which I think people are perhaps one paycheck away? And also the very fact that we need to get better at treating the homeless population here on the Central Coast. Great strides have been made. I'm absolutely ecstatic. Building a Prado and Echo, and there's going to be a homeless shelter in North County. We're still working it on South County, but more and more focus on homelessness and really the cost beyond just the affecting the person, but the social cost to homelessness. I think people are becoming much more aware.
And so I wonder, because again, this was the research was done on women specifically.
Correct.
And if you look at the global research and what women are concerned about, because women are the ones who primarily tend to the care of the elderly, the care of the sick, the care of children, they were also hypersensitized to homelessness and that fear of being removed from the comfort of a family system. Mm-hmm. So that is a kind of a universal fear. And the homelessness issue, I think, as you said before, for a lot of women is a reality, because when you look at the most vulnerable populations, one of them was the senior women who were single, 60 and older.
60 and older, right.
That's, and that population speaks to you and I, my
growing.
Friend.
Mm-hmm, it does. Oh, yeah, I know. You had to bring that up. Absolutely. And when you look at the number of the Latina population, the single moms, mm-hmm. They're living in poverty. And it's very difficult, very, very difficult for that population.
And then along, and it's no surprise that these issues all kind of cross over, with child abuse and the concern about substance abuse and domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And I think the three of them all go hand in hand.
They definitely do. We know, as moms, mm-hmm. it can be very stressful. And I had resources. I was very fortunate. And then, of course, you have to address child care and the availability of child care. And that's been on the news recently, the cost. But it's not available as it used to be. I owned a preschool a number of years ago, and it was always full. I mean, working parents aren't going to stop. But the cost of preschool is sometimes more than what an individual could bring home in a paycheck. Right. So it's a tough trade-off.
And then it falls again on women. And currently, I think 78% of mothers are also in the workforce.
Right.
And there's only child care available on the Central Coast for 30% of those working parents. Right. And that's down from 36% because child care providers are leaving the area because mm-hmm. they can't afford to even open the centers.
Right.
And
right, and the wage that you're able to pay the workers there in the preschool is quite low, so to retain quality help becomes a challenge as well. Child care workers are looking for higher paying jobs as well. So happy to see some of the large employers addressing that for their employees. That'll be huge. But it's a problem. It's a problem not only here for the Central Coast, but all over.
Licensed child care homes have dropped by 18% from 2016 to 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the cost, as you mentioned, of child care going up. And I remember being at a Board of Supervisors meeting almost a year ago now, and there was a group of women who are in the Child Care Coalition, and they were talking about the need to loosen up the licensing requirements or the zoning for homes.
Probably zoning. I mean, yeah, it's probably zoning. Certainly there's requirements for square footage based on the number of children and, of course, a ratio of an employee. But a lot of the land is now in the airport zone. Right. And so you can't build child care centers in the airport zone. And so, and again, NIMBYism, you can talk about that with homeless services, but maybe some people don't want a child care facility next to their house because kids can be
loud.
We love the laughter of children, but they can be loud and change your quality of life. So I think that there's a number of ways that can be addressed. But the most important part of this is bringing it to the awareness of the community mm-hmm. of really what do women need.
Well, and if I hadn't been sitting in that supervisors meeting, I would have never heard the coalition speak. I would have never mm-hmm. in a million years thought that our situation was so dire when it came to child care and the absolute necessity for families in order to live here need two incomes. And so that child care becomes a necessity. It's not mandated by employers to offer any kind of child care. And for families that can't afford the childcare, then we're kind of back to that other issue where women's equality has stalled out, because when childcare isn't available, then that falls on women primarily to stay at home and provide it. You know, right. 18% of the stay-at-home parents are men. I'm going to say that. And that's a big jump up from 12% 20 years ago. So that's it is an improvement. That's not a stall, but it's 18%. Mm-hmm. So that's still the rest of it falls on women to then give up their career or their job right. to provide the child care.
This kind of leads to one of the outstanding aspects of the Women's Legacy Fund is they have over $60,000 due to the generosity of donors that they can then give out to grant in granting. So we base our needs, so how we're going to award grants will be based upon the needs that we see in this study that That's was just excellent. Printed. Yeah.
So then childcare, I would imagine, is going to get elevated as one of the issues.
Sure. Financial stability, you know, and the whole dedication to improve the lives of women and children and financial stability, seniors. You would talk about teenagers here feeling helpless and bullied, and we really want to look at how can we fund programs that address that. And a lot of people talked about cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole internet thing, it's a mixed blessing on so many levels. So we're hoping that there are programs in the county that can help address that.
So I think we jumped into the report because I was so excited about all these findings. All of a sudden, I realized that, well, maybe you should talk a little bit more about the Women's Legacy Fund in general,
okay.
And why you're involved and what kind of work that they do. Because I know, mm-hmm. but I'm assuming not everyone else knows what you're doing and why you're involved. Then we'll go back to the report.
Well, it's an interest fund through the Community Foundation. So okay. there are multiple areas within the Community Foundation where it's an endowment that has built over the years.
How many years?
I wish I could tell you. Sorry.
I know. I should have warned you. I was going to ask.
Yeah. number of years. But what happened is about 100 women decided we need to do something. So they put in some money. They started an endowment. It's been at least 10. And I think they started doing funds since 2004. They started issuing grants, so that's a long time. That's 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so as this fund has grown, because the Community Foundation's been a good steward with the money, and it's grown and grown and grown, then each year they're able to award grants based on needs and then fund this need study. There's a luncheon every year where we have a great keynote speaker and show the agencies that have been awarded grants and get the word out about the good work that they're doing. It's at the Madonna Expo Center, September 24th.
Good plug.
And then another program that Women's Legacy Fund puts on is Women of Distinction in conjunction with Cuesta College. And that is this month in March because we're celebrating women's history.
Perfect.
And they give out 4 awards in areas of community and public service. This year, Patricia Oshbaugh is getting that award. Public service and professional.
Okay.
Patricia Oshbaugh. Community and public service volunteer is Jeannie Malik. Progress for Woman is Jan Hallmarks. And then the Grace N. Mitchell Lifetime Achievement is going to be given to Shirley Bianchi.
Oh.
So that will be held Thursday the 19th at Cuesta College at 4 o'clock. And you can get more information on the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation website.
So just, I love things that are grassroots oriented, that just a group of women got together and said, let's do something.
They did. And you can become a legacy leader as well for $250, right? I think initially you do $1,000, but we take payments. And then you become a legacy leader for $1,000. And that money goes straight into the endowment fund. And then you can become a sustaining legacy leader for $250 a year.
And then you get to be part, I would imagine, of determining where the money is.
Well, we'd be happy to put you on the committee. Or you can volunteer to be a grant reader. But here's the exciting aspect of this also is we realize that we're in that senior mm-hmm. age group. So we need to start filtering or getting people, younger people, yes. cultivating, thank you, I lost that word, young philanthropists. And so they started a thing called the Young 100. My daughter is a member. And they're trying to get these young 100 women excited about giving mm-hmm. and areas to give and where they can not only give their money, but their time and their interests. So we're super excited about that because they will then take over for the rest of us. Yes, and keep this good work going.
Maybe it should have been called the Next 100. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Shelley Higginbotham, former mayor of Pismo Beach, wife and mom of three, and active member of our community, serving on various boards and working hard with the Women's Legacy Fund. And today we're talking about multiple things, but the status of women is our overall conversation, considering that this is Women's History Month and International Women's Day is March the 8th, and it's Super Tuesday 2020, so hopefully everyone's gone out to vote in the year that we celebrate the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment. And I want to be sure to open up the phone lines and invite you into our conversation at 805-781-3875 if you have any questions or comments. And I want to jump back to back to our stats, because right. one of the things we talked about in the grocery store was our also shared support and love for the Child Development Resource Center in San Luis Obispo, because you were the president of the board years ago and hired me to come in and be the supervisor therapist for this program, which I don't think a lot of people know about unless you have come into contact.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about the Child Development Resource Center and why they're in the news right now.
It's an incredible program. It's been around probably 40 plus years. Mm-hmm. And years ago, had to relocate, ended up on some county property that is above the old general hospital, below probation. They provide services for over 80 children every day, and this is child care services.
And low-income families, primarily
low-income. Mm-hmm. There's on-site therapy.
Yes.
There are meals provided.
Counseling
for parents. It's a one-stop shop support program.
For not just the 80 children, but for their entire families.
Exactly. It's an incredible program, and unfortunately, their location is at risk. The county would like to expand their probation department, which is really much needed. That building mm-hmm. needs help. And part of the footprint would displace the Child Development Center. So there's been discussion, thank goodness. There was a supervisor that said, hey, wait a minute, I can't vote for this right now. Let's have another conversation about redoing this, integrating this program. So we're really, really hoping that a compromise can be found, because it's a great location. And as we talked about earlier, where are you going to find another location? And where are these 85 children going to find childcare and all the supportive services that are wrapped up in that program?
And it just is indicative of how crucial this childcare conversation is. And if you don't have children at home, it's easy to forget that that's an issue for other parents. I mean, I certainly don't remember how we got through that time. We did a lot of patchwork, right? We passed our kids back and forth, but there was very few, if any, actual childcare facilities 33 years ago. But it's still a current problem. And the quality of life, you know, we can talk about providing for families and caring for families, that children are our number one priority, and we want to make sure that they have what they need. But our actions as a populace really don't support that, because there isn't public outcry. Right. After this meeting a year ago at the Board of Supervisors, nothing has changed. This whole group of women came and begged them to take up this issue of making it easier to get places licensed, because there were actually people willing to open childcare centers, but they can't get the approval because of the zoning laws, and nothing budged. And now they want to put a parking lot for another center. Yeah, so if we're talking about what women need, and again, you know, the status of women, not just in our county, but in the world, it's very easy to overlook those things that happen outside of the media and outside of the mainstream. You know, we tuck children and seniors away mm-hmm. so we don't have to see them mm-hmm. Because they don't add anything to the economy, and we tend to only value those people mm-hmm. and things that add to the economy. So
we could get into the seniors as well.
We
because,
will.
Okay. I'll let you go. You're well, in charge.
Well, I just want to throw, I want to make sure we get a little break in and give people time to absorb what we're talking about here today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Shelley Higginbotham, and we're talking about the status of women in our community and in culture and in the world globally in Women's History Month. And you are invited to be part of our conversation. 805-781-3875 is our number. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls.
Listen as your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds, try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears, go ahead, release your fears, stand up and be counted, don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day. Herald what your mother said, read the books your father read, trying to solve the puzzles in your own sweet time. Some may have more cash than you, others take a different view.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875, and my guest is Shelley Higginbotham. She's part of the Women's Legacy Fund, who funded this report, What Do Women Need? Issues Impacting Women and Girls in San Luis Obispo County. I find it fascinating that the issues that were apparently big issues for women in this county are big for women, not just in this country, but around the world. Just the similarities between the biggest concerns expressed, availability of water, the quality of that water, homelessness, child abuse, substance abuse, employment issues, lack of employment opportunities for women, and domestic intimate partner violence. And one of the other pieces that came up in the report, which also mirrors what's happening in the general population, is that senior women 60 plus are over 20% of the female population. They are concerned, or this age group of women is concerned about the availability of care for them as they age and need to go into some sort of senior residence or retirement community. And we don't have that availability here on the Central Coast. It lacks around the country, especially in California. The cost is exorbitant. There are more senior women who are single in this area than anywhere else in the state of California. And they have no place to go once they retire or if they need care.
You're right. And we're seeing a new trend for some seniors, if they have some resources, that they're going to stay in place. Mm-hmm. So they are now modifying their existing homes so they can stay there because they found that it's going to be far less expensive, because care for seniors out of home care can run anywhere from $5,000 to $13,000 a month.
I think that's what they said.
And I'm not sure that there's many insurance, unless you have long-term care insurance, that will cover that. And again, we have one center for low-income seniors, and it's full. And I'm sure the waiting list is huge.
And what's not said in the report, but what we know statistically, is that senior women, after single women, single mothers, who have the highest rate of poverty in society, second to that are senior women who 60 plus who end up single are the most likely to fall below the poverty line. And one of the reasons is that women primarily are the caregivers of children, but also the care of the elderly and the sick fall to women.
Right.
Two-thirds of the care of the elderly falls to the eldest daughter of families. And so if you're a woman who stayed home and raised your children and for a third of your life. And then a third of your life, you're in the workplace. But then a third of your life, you have been caring for aging parents or aunts or uncles or the elderly. You've only had a third of your life to become economically stable. And so now you're reaching your senior years without any sort of safety net.
It's a really, really good point. And I'm not sure what the answer is. I really don't. I mean, obviously, we need more child care facilities. We need more senior care facilities. The cost of health care, especially on the Central Coast, is extremely high. I don't think a lot of people know that medical care individuals, they get reimbursed at a lower rate because we are considered a rural county. Mm-hmm. So to get the same kind of care for a doctor to provide a procedure here, you're going to get reimbursed less than if you're a physician in LA or San Francisco. So hence, it's harder to get more healthcare professionals here.
A whole nother issue.
A whole other issue that could help address, especially with the seniors, some of these issues. It's just a conundrum. And I hope to see more interesting and, for instance, I talked to Mary Gardner from RTA, and she used to own Telosa Press, and she said, I see us women, when her husband's passed, we're going to make a big compound because we need to all take care of each other, and we need to become much more aware of the needs of everyone but of women, older women in our community. And check out your neighbors. Make sure your neighbors are doing okay, because there are a lot of isolated seniors here that just need somebody to knock on the door and check on them.
Well, and that dovetails beautifully into this other piece of the status of women that has to do with the family system. And interestingly, this surprised me, but the nuclear family is actually kind of spreading and dominating a great deal of the world. Where there used to be much more of a collectivistic focus on extended families and looking out for each other so that families lived together multi-generationally and they shared resources. And so child care was done by the elders of the family and the younger members went and worked and everyone shared the wealth. But this Western model of the nuclear family, which the United States and Western countries, Europe kind of started this trend post-World War II, actually, when there was a huge influx of money and all of these young returning soldiers came back and they used their GI Bill to buy these new little homes that were built. And so there was this formation of these tiny little nuclear families, just four people. But the unintended consequence is that the nuclear family always comes to an end because the children grow and then leave home, and then you just have these two people in the home, and then women tend to live almost 20 years on average more than men, so you had a lot of women now ending up alone in these little houses. And so what sounded like this great idealized version of the independent I, which, you know, our whole capitalist competitive nature is centered on, I am the most important, has ended up setting up this lack of support for seniors, lack of support for children, lack of support for families.
Right.
And I don't know, I don't think we can mandate extended families to come back together. That we can't legislate that. But it's an unintended consequence of this forward movement of the American ideal that somehow, you know, everyone fending for themselves is the best plan. But now we have, as you mentioned, you know, huge problems with loneliness and suicide rates. Mm-hmm. So if you have senior women who are kind of focusing on who are aging and finding themselves in deep poverty, you have senior men who are high risk for suicide. That's a whole other piece of our unintended consequence. So just another part of the kind of the stall out in our growth when we don't pay attention to the social issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back because as you talked about that, I'm thinking of these major employers that have the resources and opportunity to provide on-site childcare, because if you think about that, it's a little bit extended. So mom or dad can go to work, but they can drop their child off. They can have lunch together. They can go to work and know that their child is being well taken care of and go home together. And it's less fragmented. Mm-hmm. I guess that I'm a little Pollyanna in that. And I see that as a really major step. And so maybe we could take it a step further, and maybe there could be senior daycare in some of these places, you know, a place to drop mom or dad off, you know, and I can check on them at lunch or something.
Well, because we do have day centers, but yeah, they're not connected to any workforce. Well, and then there have been some models of integrating senior care and child care.
Exactly.
I would love to see that.
Wouldn't that be great?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's good for the mental health and well-being of the seniors to have that activity and stimulation, and it's great for children to have that opportunity to see the seniors in our community, because we tend to all live in our little separate worlds.
Right.
And a whole other piece of it is the fear women have of aging, and that our society and the social media, and we talked a bit about body image issues last week on the air, that constant pressure to have to be young and attractive in order to be suitable or seen in society is really unrealistic for women. It ends up isolating women, because one of the easy fixes, and I think we talked about last week, was that if you showed young children from the time they're very young pictures of elderly people and said, "This is the most beautiful person on earth," and you told them over and over, and they spent time with elder people, by the time they were 20, 30, 40, the whole idea of beauty, they would look forward to growing old. Mm-hmm. But we set up this social construct that growing old is horrible, especially for women. And I don't know if you've reached that. I think you're still too young and vibrant. But I remember my mom talking about hitting this point where she felt invisible.
Mm-hmm. And one of the areas that the Women's Legacy wants to fund and looking for agencies to do grants is the whole internet and cyberbullying, but actually to really educate young women and girls about the internet and the pitfalls of this is fake stuff. And these women, you know, they make money from, I guess, your YouTube
the influencers.
See, you're much more in it than I am. But they make money looking a certain way and this persona, and it isn't real. And to try to make yourself look like that person, or you have to dress a certain way, or we need to educate our girls better, that to appreciate who they are. Like you said, nobody looks that way. There's a few, okay, but.
But it goes back to, there's two pieces to that. What I was talking about, the talk with Angela Davis on Saturday, and she talked about, you can educate people all you want, but if you don't change the foundations of which these ideals are pushed, all the education in the world won't matter. Mm-hmm. And so we have to hit the institutions that keep pushing this idea of what is ideal beauty, because they have a lot of power. And the other conundrum about dealing with the cyber experience is that there is counter research that also shows that for a lot of young women, their self-esteem is in some ways enhanced because of the likes that they get when they post a selfie on Instagram. And so that also makes it challenging, is that there is, you know, nothing is all bad or all good mixed in this world of social media. There are some young people, young women who are finding that it makes them feel connected to other people because they post a picture and all of a sudden 100 people say, "You're beautiful." Mm-hmm. So that makes it tough. It's just not a one. Mm-hmm.
Building self-confidence.
Yeah.
And building self-confidence within themselves and how they can function in the world successfully is key. And that whole self-esteem. And you know, just like I know, you feeling good about yourself on a particular day, it's great. You can do anything, leap tall buildings in a single bound, and to get more role models and to get more people.
Mentors.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Boys and Girls Club we funded, offered a grant to Boys and Girls Club, Smart Girls, or French Hospital had a program to help girls in elementary school build self-esteem. And how do you deal with bullying? And how do you feel better about yourself? Mm-hmm. What is that look like? What would be different? And how do you function on those down days? How do you seek resources? How do you take care of yourself?
My guest is Shelley Higginbotham, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875, and we're kind of wandering through the status of women on this Super Tuesday during Women's History Month. The International Women's Day is on March the 8th, and we're looking at the status report, Issues Impacting Women and Girls in San Luis Obispo County 2020, funded by the Women's Legacy Fund, What Do Women Need? And you're welcome to call with your comments or questions. And I wanted to kind of continue with this idea of how we help young women or women in general. And I think that having contact with the mentoring piece is huge, because someone like you, you know, who was a stay-at-home mom, had your daycare, got your master's, but raised three kids. You and I always talk about that was our primary job.
Right.
But then you also got active with your community and working with Dinosaur Caves Park. And then that kind of led to running for mayor, like things that I don't think you ever thought you would do, but found yourself in this place. And so how do you use that experience to empower or encourage other young women who are in their 30s or 40s to say, hey, add this to your experience level. You can do this. The actual real life.
Yeah, you show up. You show up and you say, I want to go to the high school. I want to go to the junior high school. I want to go to the elementary on Read Across America Day and say, I'm the mayor. You don't have a badge. I used to tell the police chief, I don't have a badge or anything.
Right, that says,
you know, there's no uniform that says mayor, but to show that it is possible. It is possible. You can come from very basic means. I didn't come from money, and I came from, well, not about me, but you can work hard and build yourself up, and you have mentors and people that support you along the way and get involved. And, I mean, we have three female mayors out of seven cities right now. We have two women on the Board of Supervisors of five. And that's truly important because it does bring a different perspective. And those are the individuals, those women can be mentors. They have the ability to go out and show these girls anything is possible.
Well, and that was one of the areas where, although globally and nationally, although women's rights and progress has stalled out really since the 1980s, in local politics, women have made great strides, just like you said. And it's interesting about women across kind of the globe where, you know, the patriarch or the kind of the masculine dominates CEO positions and big corporate agriculture and the, you know, government itself. But when it comes to the day-to-day running the household, it's primarily women who are running homes, running the economy of their homes. It's primarily women who are in the work of educating and raising our children in schools, but also at home. It's women across the world that are the primary planters, growers, and harvesters of agriculture around the world. And yet women own less than 20% of the land, but they're doing 75% of the feeding of the world. It's kind of in the micro way, the microcosm of the world, that women make huge impacts, and yet they kind of get stuck because the institutions above them keep them from progressing forward or having access to greater education and greater opportunities. Mm-hmm. Although ironically, 54% of those in undergraduate programs right now are women. 60% of those in graduate programs are women. Women are more statistically in society than men. And if women actually voted in equal proportion to men, they would represent, you know, they would have the electoral majority. But because women are so busy doing the day-to-day work of keeping families and schools and communities running, they have a hard time influencing the big picture.
Mm-hmm. I think they've shown worldwide mm-hmm. that communities where women are actually an active part of the workforce, that those communities thrive.
Yes.
They do better economically and health-wise. And I know that there's a number of agencies that help educate women and bring in commerce and help facilitate that because they do better.
I find it also interesting that in 1980, the UN released this finding, that women constitute half of the world's population, perform nearly two-thirds of its work hours, receive one-tenth of the world's income, and own less than one-hundredth of the world's property. And that statistic in 2020, 40 years later, has not changed much, just a tiny bit. Women still don't have anywhere in the world the same legal or constitutional rights as men. You know, and again, you would think the United States of all places would immediately have that. But without the, as I mentioned earlier in the show, without the ratification of the ERA, constitutionally, women are not considered equal to men under the law. And those are some of the big things that need to change institutionally for women to really go forward. But let's talk about, like, again, the big strive in the small way that women make a difference as far as funding, you know, a study like this and saying child care is an issue. Now let's actually help provide more child care.
Right.
Is that enough at the end of the day? Like, can we stay under the, I just know, as I'm talking, thinking, Shelley, can we stay under the radar? Because it sounds like there's these big institutions that kind of control everything, but women are just quietly toiling away, you know, taking care of the families, taking care of agriculture, taking care of business.
I don't know, to tell you the truth. I mean, you still talk about the wage disparity in the corporate world between men and women. That it's crazy. So women won't stop toiling away.
They'll always be toiling. How to make that leap? Because you and I both have daughters, and
right.
I have a granddaughter.
Right.
Am I okay with them always bumping up against the bigger opportunity to make change?
Well, if you were to talk to my daughter, mm-hmm. she's going to continue to bump up, and she will work hard to make change, definitely. We as women need to take better care of ourselves. We need to treat each other better and with respect and boost each other up, because once we start doing that, I don't think there's stopping us. We need to just join hands and work together instead of, I think sometimes we get petty like chickens aren't very nice to each other, and women can tend to be that way. But if we really just treat each other better and work together, I think there's no stopping change.
And I wonder if it has to do a bit with this idea that if you do better, that means there's less opportunity for me. You know, there's a bit of that competitive story that's pushed out there in the world that there's limited opportunities for women. And so anyone who starts to really do well, other women feel threatened. It's like, well, if she does well, then I'll never have a chance. And I think that's one of the ceilings.
That's a really good point. Or if I do better, I'm going to open this door and look, we're all going to walk through that door and we will have a plethora of opportunities.
But I think
that we didn't know.
I think that's something that's unique about you. And you said, oh, this isn't a show about me. But I invited you on for a reason, because I do believe that, you know, when it comes to International Women's Day, you are the kind of the perfect person to represent the, you know, opportunities or achievements of women when it comes to social and economic and political opportunities, that you kind of built a really strong platform for yourself by just volunteering and showing up and running for office when you didn't think you could. And so this is a little bit about you. And one of the things I know about you, Shelley, just from my own personal experience, is that you consistently open doors. And I know you do this for a lot of people, but for me, that finding me and bringing me to the job at CDRC, at Child Development Resource Center, at a time where I was staying home full time and there wasn't a lot of work opportunities that were part time for moms. And that's a whole nother piece of this,
right.
You know, to be able to have flexibility in our work. And you said, hey, I have flexibility and you need work, come do this, which opened up doors for me at Cal Poly, which opened up doors here. I mean, I don't know if you realize that you are always looking around and networking, saying, where can I plug this person in? How can I help them help this area? And I think that that is a little bit unique.
Well, I'm fortunate to, I appreciate that. Thank you. But I'm fortunate to have had the opportunity to be affiliated with these incredible organizations like the Child Development Center and Five Cities Homeless Coalition and People's Self-Help Housing, and to be in office and had the opportunity for people outside to educate me mm-hmm. on what's important and what this community needs. And there are so many people that volunteer. All of my friends are involved in something, and they give in their own way. It's amazing the work that's done. And those stay-at-home moms are the ones that are doing the PTA, and they're the ones that are maybe bringing kids home to their house after school because those kids are going home to no parent for a while.
Because our child care.
And boy, yes. You want to talk about filling a void. Have the moms at school check and see which friends are going home. I think in the old days they called it the latchkey child, right?
Yes.
Bring them home. You know, do something. Start a revolution that way. Like we talked about, check on your neighbors. Yeah. What's going on down the street? Do you know if somebody's by themselves? The police department can tell you. They'll tell you who they need to do welfare checks on, and they can tell you who's alone.
So as we wrap things up, how can people get more information about the Women's Legacy Fund?
Okay, so thank you for asking that. If you go to the Community Foundation website, which is cfsandsamloco.org, go to that website and you'll find the information about the foundation, but then you'll find interest funds. And scroll down to the Women's Legacy. It'll tell you everything you ever wanted to know about the Women's Legacy, history, how to get involved, the luncheon, women of distinction, who we're giving grants to, and what a great interest fund this is.
Shelley Higginbotham, thanks for being a fantastic guest and bringing the What Do Women Need report into the studio today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Please find us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also podcast our show, leave a review so more people can find us, and celebrate Women's History Month,
yes,
and International Women's Day, and just the radical wonderfulness that women are in general.
Be kind to each other.
And look forward to talking to you again next Tuesday at 2. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.